With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It is the Anfield Wrap. I am Neil Atkinson. I'm joined by Sean O'Donnell, by Joel Richards, and by John Gibbons in order to go through the pre-season so far and what needs to happen next from Liverpool from a transfer point of view. Also coming up, we've got John Gibbons and Craig Hannon talking about their forthcoming trip to Singapore, on which they will be joined by Sean. What a happy little crew they are. The Singapore Reds, that's what they call them. and that is to come to everything that you need to look forward to across the board there. But we will start off with the pre-season so far. We will accentuate the positive first and foremost, John, before we get to talk about the work that is to come. Got some good attackers, haven't we?
Yeah, absolutely, and they've all scored. I made the mistake on the post-match show yesterday of saying that they've all scored apart from Gakpo, remembering that he did the really nice sort of turn and finish. There's been a lot of goals in both sides, hasn't there, in both nets, but they've all scored, which is great after two games, and they all look raring to go, and it's a nice problem to have. I, you know, suspect that the manager will rotate them and want to rotate them, but, you know, depending on the opposition and things like that, and also obviously keeping people fresh. But he's got a really good selection there. They all look raring to go. I think it's a really good argument as well for competition for places, because I don't think it's any coincidence that the area where we've looked the sharpest are the ones where it's hardest to pick, you know, for the start of the season. I think, you know, at the back, we all pretty much know who's going to play that first game of the season. I think, you know, midfield, obviously there's more question marks at the moment because of ins and outs and things like that. But the forward line, you know, it's tough to know. I tried to do it a bit of a prediction before on Twitter that I'm going to keep changing, you know, as we get more information. But, you know, two good players are going to be left out. But isn't that brilliant? Because if everyone stays fit, there'll be two really good options off the bench.
The competition for places point, Sean, I think is massive. I think you can make an argument you like to have a settled centre-half partnership. Certainly for big games, you know, you want to feel as though those two know each other. But everywhere else, and I think especially, you know, in attack, the idea of being able to say, these look freshest, these look sharpest, these look best suited to what we need to do next, I think that's major. And I think Liverpool look like they're going to have that and possibly have a better array of options than anyone else in the division.
It's massive, and I think it's not my problem, so I'm not too worried, but there's going to be a couple of really good players missing out on really big games next year, which is something we haven't really had, because if you think about the front three we've had in our pomp over the last few years, it's been a mainstay. You know, the playing, it's only when Jota come in really there was a little bit of competition with Firmino, and it worked for us, and I'm a little bit nervous now that because a striker, when they're at the best and when they're firing, we want to keep in the team. So I'm thinking about Nunes here and thinking, if he's sharp and he's scoring goals and he's playing, he probably needs to play four or five games in a row to get to that level. And what you're going to see now is, you know, whether it's Gakpo, whether it's Jota, whoever it may be, is going to be sat on the sidelines for a large part of time. And again, it's not my problem, so, you know, I shouldn't be too worried, but I am just a little bit like, wow, we've got so many. It's a nice problem to have.
It's one where this is where the five subs comes in, you know, and I think that there might be, I feel as though I saw John's predicted team, and I don't want to see, if there's one thing I can say with a level of certainty, is that I don't necessarily want to see the front three be Diaz, Gakpo and Salah for home games against sides at the bottom of the division. But the first game's away at Chelsea. And it wouldn't surprise me, for instance, if some games you see exactly what I've just described. Certainly away games where getting on the ball, looking after the ball, getting a bridgehead, that's the way Liverpool start. Get to 60 minutes, change it. And that's what I think that the manager's got the option of, Joel. And for me, that's exciting.
Yeah, it is, because as you say there, if you see that front three start at Chelsea, Salah, Gakpo and Diaz, I wouldn't be too concerned by it. However, if Nunes keeps up his form, he's going to be very hard to ignore. And I think with a large majority of the fan base, if Nunes keeps scoring, there's going to be a clamour for him to start, because throughout last season, when he hit little purple patches, there was a big clamour for him to start. And I think if he continues as he is, that's going to happen more and more. But then you've also got the Jota question as well. you know, Jota ended the season pretty well, at, considering that he went over a year without scoring for us. So if he can end the season, sorry, if he can start how he finished last season, again, he's a possibility. He had that chance yesterday where he should have buried it, but he never. So maybe that's just a little bit of ring rust in him. And going forward, I think, yeah, there are tantalising possibilities to have. So, like, say, for example, the week after against Bournemouth, if Nunes didn't start at Chelsea, you'd be hanging your hat on Nunes starting against Bournemouth because, quite frankly...
Or he could start four.
Yeah, he could. And the thing is, if you're going into that Bournemouth home game, you're looking at it, realistically, look, maybe not another 9-0, but you're looking at battering them, like laying down a marker for the first home game of the new season. Whatever happens at Chelsea, you need to go into that home game to get the crowd going, more importantly. And if we get a positive result at Chelsea, just keep the momentum going.
There is... The other thing about them, John, as impressive as I think the five of them are, the other thing that strikes me is, as you know, Joel's stated there to an extent with Jota, I feel like all four have got a level to go up, maybe even more than one level. And so you start where they are now, your expectations of them now, you know, would be all to be at a certain level, which would be more than good enough for Liverpool to be able to compete at the very top of the table. But I think all four of the ones that aren't Salah have got another gear. And for me, that's what's so exciting.
Yeah, massively. Nunes was staying at the start of last season. Like, you know, it's been tough, but I'm not too worried. He said, I struggled my first season at Benfica, then exploded, and I expect to do the same again. And listen, it's very early days and we haven't played a proper game, but at the moment, you know, he's looking like he believes it anyway. And the more you watch him, the more you believe him.
It very much helps that he believes it.
Yeah,
I think, in this instance.
Massively, yeah, because I think towards the back end of last season, you know, after what he says, yeah, I think he did lose a bit of confidence and I wasn't quite sure, you know, what to do. There was one towards the end where he goes through and tries to square it. But this time, you know, I mean, he does that incidentally at the start of the first friendly, but then it gets a lucky bounce, gets his goal, and then maybe that's woke him up a bit and thought, oh, I'll just do that. And that's what he did in the second game.
Discuss me options later.
Basically, yeah, it's two great finishes, and, you know, he's a bit unlucky with the header as well, although I think he should score. I think there's enough of the goal not to bring the goalie into it, but it's a good save. But I think, you know, he looks super, super confident, and it wouldn't surprise you at all if he explodes. Gakpo is still only had half a season at the club, and when he came, you know, we were really struggling on the pitch, and so with the proper pre-season and getting to know the league more, getting to know his teammates more, him as well, you know, everything points to him having a better season. You know, you look at Jota as well. I think he's looked really sharp in pre-season, and there's an argument, you know, like the others to start him in that first game as well. And he's a big game player. He gets big goals for Liverpool. We know that, but it's been great seeing how good he's looked. We've not seen that, you know. Maybe even for over a year. I don't think looking quite as sharp as what he is now. The one for me is Diaz. I really think he's got so many more levels to do. I don't think it's a guarantee that he gets there, but you see the goal he scores, and that's the kind of goal where you can imagine him getting like 15 to 20 of just them. You know, like Robin just used to do is, you know, there was a point where Robin just went, oh, I've just clocked this. Do you know what I mean? I've just figured out how to do this and just score and get me goal. And everyone's like, oh, Robin does keep doing the same thing. And it's like, yeah, but he keeps going in the back of the net. He's working out his angles, I think, Diaz. That's what you sort of see him do on the pitch. And it was a really unfortunate injury he got. And I think it sort of stalled him a little bit. But, you know, on the ball, I think he's frightening and what he can do. And you know, as I say, I could see him on the pitch almost sort of figuring out, really, because he knows he can beat a man, but it's almost like, well, how do I beat a man? And he knows he can get a shot away, and he knows he's got a powerful shot, but when's the moment to shoot? The goal he gets, he shoots a bit early, I think, which is a mad thing to say because he's got the ball for a while, but he hits it, I think, earlier than what the keeper sort of expects him to. He's got that in it. I think there's loads more to come from Diaz potentially. It needs to happen. And I'm not saying it's guaranteed. I'm not saying for any of them it's guaranteed. But I think Diaz is the one who really, really could shock a few people, you know, at some point. And he is one where I can see him going from 10 to 12 goals, you know, just doubling it in 1 year, like players sometimes do, where they go, oh, I've just figured out how I get my goals, and this is it.
just on the goal that he scored yesterday, I was made up with that, because the shooting early thing, I think, is a thing, and it's something that, and the piece of play that Jota did just before the goal was really good, but I was a little bit frustrated by it, because it was like almost what we'd done too much of last year, where we're trying to overplay it and trying to sort of walk it in the goal. I think you know, touched on the melee, but you think about like Sadio Mane, his goals are just like get it, shoot, and
it's a bit of a Mane goal,
and it reminded me of that. And I think that's what, you know, we missed a bit of last year. And it is probably down to sharpness. You know, he spent most of the season injured. Yeah, you think of the goal he scored before he got injured, it was like he just got it, he took it and took it upon himself to do it. That's what I'm excited by the most. It's the sharpness that they're all seeing. And if we can be more ruthless like that, then, you know, we'll score more goals, because we know that we didn't score enough last year.
I felt that the goal almost seemed effortless from him. You know, it just, you say about shooting early and whatnot, it was just... how he did it was just sort of just came to him naturally. And you talk about goals he scored before his injury last season, you know, the one that obviously stood out was against Crystal Palace, where he just took it upon himself to just jinx through a couple of the Palace defenders and then just whacked the battered amateur into the goal, you know. And he has got that in him, and I think even a couple of other goals that he scored for us so far, as you say, he just composes himself so easily in front of goal. And that's the next thing now, as you said, John, he just needs to get up to the 10 to 12 goal mark, even maybe a bit more, if we're, you know, if we've got all this array of attacking talent on us this season, why can't they all get past double figures and beyond?
What I find frustrating with him, and I found frustrating with him, it isn't so much where the ability is, it's where he's doing it on the pitch.
Yeah.
For me, it's him being around the penalty area, Joel. That's what I want to see. I want to see him around the penalty area doing what he can do. I think he's very good at getting Liverpool 30 yards up the pitch through the middle of the pitch. But then when we're there, he then needs to be producing that stuff around the box, because I think if he does, he'll create the space and he'll create himself the opportunities.
And even as well, in terms of providing goals, you know, I think he got the assist for Nunes in that Arsenal game before he got injured. So even that part of his game, Neil, as well, he needs to get involved a bit more, as you say, get closer to the goal, essentially.
So you are going to Singapore, Sean. And yes, if there's one thing I'm jealous of, hard to put into words how jealous of, it's that you're going to get some quality Ben Doak in the flesh time. It is... no one else has a Ben...
Sean's carrying in his bags.
Honestly.
Literally.
There is no one else, I don't think, in the league who's got a Ben Doak that I know of. He really is a throwback as a player, and I mean that as a massive compliment. Everything about him is so breakthrough Michael Owen territory, and it's not to say he's going to go on Michael Owen's career, because that would just be an unfair burden. But that unbelievably direct shirt, billowing him around him, still strong as anything, so quick, you know, he's so exciting, he really is.
He is. I really hope he doesn't go out on loan. I mean, I don't think he will, but I really hope he doesn't, because I think we could do with...
First half of the season, he can't, surely. Yeah, he's not too many opportunities.
Yeah, I agree. And I think he's 17, like, it's frightening to look at him, because he's got that... the fearlessness of a 17-year-old, but actually, as you say, that like the ability to just glide past people and take people on, be direct, is something that is a breath of fresh air, and you don't really see that much in younger kids these days, because I think everyone's like almost overcautious to play the right pass or to do the right thing on the pitch, whereas he's come on like a whirlwind, hasn't he? Just come on and just wants to just run at people straight away, which is good, and I'm really excited to see him in the flex, to be honest, because we didn't see too much of him last year, but I think hopefully, as I say, if he doesn't go out on loan, we can see more of him this year.
It's interesting, Sean phrases that, because one of the things he was almost certainly being absolutely brilliantly coached, John, but he doesn't look that coached, and I mean, you know, you really feel as though the main thing that Liverpool almost need to do is to find a way to sort of streamline this incredible talent into its decision making first and foremost, because without sort of sounding ridiculously dramatic, it feels like so many other things are already there.
Yeah, he's like a bit of a throwback, isn't he? He looks like a street player, and you know, that's meant to have been coached out of, you know, footballers now. And people say, oh, they go into the academy systems and things like that. I don't know whether it's because, you know, it's slightly different in Scotland, sort of how they do the academy setup. I don't know. It feels like there's a lot of good players coming out there at the moment, so they're obviously doing a lot right. But you know, he just looks like... You know, I've said the Rooney stuff before, and listen, I don't think he'll quite have the career the Rooney did, because it was incredible. But when someone emerges at 17 and they look like a man and they play like, well, I've just been the best player all my life, and I'm going to continue to be the best player, and I don't care what you've won, you know, it's really refreshing, and it's really kind of like there's something quite old school about him and the sort of the situation, really. And I think he will continue to back himself. Like you say, there's games there for him first half of the season for him to, you know, I've just been talking about a five, you know, there's potential by Christmas. We are saying it's a six. It's a six for, you know, and he's in consideration not just for these Europa League games, it's for every games. I mean, we were saying about, you know, Diaz, you know, had an end product. I mean, we do need to remember, you know, he's not scored a goal for Liverpool yet, I don't think, because it's a competitive one. So, you know, he needs to sort of show that he can do that. But he certainly looks dangerous. He certainly looks like he backs himself, and he's got every attribute that he could need to be a top footballer, including that mentality.
Well, what alerted me to him was the performances that he gave in the UEFA Youth League last season. John, like, I went to Rangers away.
We had 10 men, yeah. And he was like, I'm just winning this game.
Yeah, he took it all on his shoulders in that particular game. But there was even other goals he scored or assisted. And we were looking at the videos, and I was thinking, oh my God, who's this kid? Like, I knew we'd signed him from Celtic, but I was just thinking, have we managed to pull one off here who we could potentially have as our own, and we can develop him, you know, in maybe a similar style to a Raheem Sterling? I know that's maybe putting a bit of pressure on him, but, you know, when he came in, there was all the videos of Sterling, you know, in the FA Youth Cup and other academy games, where you think, like, everyone was getting genuinely excited by this prospect. And I feel like the same thing happened to a degree with Doak last season. And then he gets his chance around Christmas in the first team when we were struggling. And to be honest, you know, he was on Arden to Nottingham at that period. You know, he couldn't have come in and have lit the place up, because the team as a whole was performing terribly. But it was encouraging to see him getting minutes at Villa away. I think he came on at Brighton when the game was already done. But, you know, the fact that he was being involved in the matchday squads, and that Klopp rated him highly enough to give him a chance, albeit in the team's darkest moment during last season. But watching him yesterday, he was encouraging. He was going forward in the first half. You know, he was battling. He had a few good chances, and that's what we want. As much as we want to see the best players and the established stars at the moment, if he can come in and let's say he gets half, if not the majority, of the Europa League group games, I'm not complaining. If I see him starting on the team sheet in those Europa League games, I'm not concerned at all.
You're bouncing into the stadium is what you're doing.
Yeah. Again,
you're bouncing into the ground is what you're doing. Exactly. Let's be clear, that's my thing.
Yeah,
you're
getting a chance to see this kid, see what he's all about. And if he can get a couple of goals in the first team this season, no, that'll garner the excitement even more. The Carabao Cup game should be his as given. That, like, let's be clear about that. Like, he's got to start the Carabao Cup games this season, however many we have. And as I say, you know, if he gets promised the Europa League games, or, you know, plays the majority of them, I'm genuinely happy. And then, even taking it further, if he can then go into the Premier League games against, you know, some of the bottom half sides where we need something different to unlock defences if we're struggling to break them down, you know, he's got to be the first one off the bench.
The biggest tell for me on Doak is Jurgen Klopp's face when he mentions him. It's like he bursts into laughter before he talks about him. I don't know if you've seen the interview that he did with Peter McDowell last week, but he's talking about the training camp, he's talking about the players, and he talks about the young players, and then he just starts laughing and says, "Doaky," you know what I mean? Like, if he's talking about someone like that, he knows that he's got someone on his hands there.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I liked all the comparisons, and how we all went, I don't want to put too much pressure on him.
Compared him to the greatest English talent of the last 50 years.
I feel as though it was remiss that no one mentioned Maradona. they don't score enough last season, John. If you take out United, Bournemouth and Leeds, we only bang 52 in the league out of the other 35 games. Dysfunctional sides rarely score consistently. I sort of went through it this morning. They fail to score regularly enough against the bottom 10. I think it's the understated thing, because we were watching them concede daft goals. You know, they only registered more than one goal against the bottom 10 on 10 occasions out of 20 fixtures. That's only 50%, obviously. Of the remaining other 10, they only win one other game 1-0, if you see what I mean. Same comparison, Arsenal, out of the 20 games against the bottom 10, home and away, 14 times they scored two or more goals, and three of the other remaining six games they won 1-0. So that's 85% there, where, you know, listen, I think Arsenal got a 3-0 draw in there, don't get me wrong, scoring more than two against a bottom 10 side doesn't guarantee your victory, but if you score two or more against most bottom 10 sides, you would expect to walk away having won the game, John, and Liverpool just didn't do it often enough last season. It's got to improve before we criticise a lot of the backup defending that we've seen across these two pre-season games. I think it's worth pointing that out.
Yeah, and I think the key for me is moving the ball quickly and moving the ball effectively, and making sure these great forward players that we've talked about are getting the ball in dangerous positions, but also when the defence sort of isn't quite set, really. And, you know, you think about, you know, some really tough games that we had, Brighton away. It, you know, Salah plays in that. You know, the forward line's fine, but, you know, it could have been me, Sean and Joel up front that day, and we wouldn't have mattered, because it was, they're just not getting the ball, or they are getting the ball, but it's, you know, it's not quality possession, or it's getting the ball when they've had to come really deep to get it. You know, you don't want to be seeing, you know, wide forwards almost ending up like wingers, because they're having to come and get the ball to get involved almost. You want Salah right up the pitch. You want Salah in positions where he's one-on-one against his defender, or you know, you want us pulling about, and so we're getting Diaz, say, if he's on the left-hand side in space and he's able to sort of go at them. And that quality of ball, I think, was what was missing, you know, generally how quickly we moved the ball went out of our game, but also, you know, getting the ball up to the forwards quickly in ways that they're able to exploit space behind or really hurt the opposition. I think McAllister's going to be massive for that.
Yeah,
it's really interesting to me how his teammates are talking about him. We've all seen the interview with Josh.
Way to pass is gorgeous.
Yeah, his way to pass is his speed of pass, but also he fizzes it in and I think Curtis Jones is really big for that. I think Trent, when he played the new position, you know, he was sort of fizzing balls in, and so I think these sort of players will unlock a lot more from our forwards and ensure that they're getting better ball. So not just getting the ball, but getting better ball, which they're able to make things happen. And I think that's the massive key for me. Obviously, you know, we're all hoping that there's more midfielders to come in that's going to help us, you know, dominate games, get on top of games, and that'll help even more as well. But from what I'm seeing from a creative point of view, it looks better for me. As I say, it was no coincidence that we got better when Jones and Trent came into the team, because they're good at those linear passes, and Trent's being able to hit those balls from a more central area, you know, really helped our forwards last season. And I think, you know, Kurt the same, he's really good at firing that ball in, as well as the fact that he just doesn't give it away, which I think really helps you from an attacking point of view as well in terms of building attacks. McAllister, it looks great so far, and it's been interesting to me. I had a little conversation with Rob about this on Twitter yesterday about, you know, when we bought him, it was like, oh, we can do a bit of eight and do a bit of six. We haven't bought any defensive midfielders. He's not played 1 minute deep, which is, it just says to me that A, the confidence of getting lads in, and B, like, they've got no interest. They've seen him and how well he links up with those attackers, and goes, the last thing we want to do is move him 15 yards back. We don't want him passing to Szoboszlai. We want him passing to Mo Salah. We want him passing to whoever's playing centre forward. And I think that's been really interesting to me.
The big nine, last nine games of the season, Joel, mentioned there Liverpool 50%. Only 10 occasions do they manage to score more than two or more against the bottom 10 sides. Five of them come in the last nine when there is the change of shape. Four of them are away from home, West Ham, Leicester, Leeds and Southampton. Forest was at Anfield. But the others all come when Liverpool are on the road. It seems to me as though the main thing that the shape change is about, first and foremost, and we may see this as the season wears on, it's about dealing with the sides actually in the bottom half. It's about changing it so that you're able to get the ball forward, what John's described there, move it forward quicker, look after it better, and then take them apart is the plan. It seems to me as though that's the primary purpose of the shape, is to take those bottom half sides to the cleaners first and foremost.
Yeah, and that's what we need to do ultimately. If we are going to have any chance of challenging for the title, you've got to take care of the teams at the bottom half of the table. You've got to try and blow them away if you can possibly, but ultimately, you've just got to win. And the thing is with them is, you know, there's a few games that stood out to me last season while you've been talking, and I was trying to think of them. You know, early on, we had the Goodison Derby, which was 0-0, you know, where we were just all over the place. Salah wasn't anywhere near the goal, and although we had chances, just didn't look like scoring all day. Forest away was the same. Yeah. That's the one that I pulled my ear out at a lot. You know, I know the season's been gone now, but in the midst of it, Forest away was one that just absolutely burnt my head out, because of all the chances we had. But again, we look dysfunctional, we just didn't get going, even though we had a late flurry of chances in that game. And then, you know, you try and think of other games as well, but they all just seem to merge into one at one point or another. But I think yeah, we need to do something different next season. We need to go into these games and try and reassert ourselves as a team who will constantly pressurise them, but from different angles, you know, because what we've done in the past now, it's come to a point that we need to change it up. We've got a couple of new players who are in who can maybe offer something different. We've got, as we've already discussed, five, potentially six forwards who could basically take these teams apart if they're on form and they're clicking together. So next season, that has got to be the stated aim, is, you know, take care of all the teams at the bottom half, because if you get home on the way, because if you beat more often, I'm trying to think, so that bottom half, 10 games, 20 games. So if you win, say, 14 to 16 of them out of 20.
More.
You know, or even more, arguably, then that's already taking care of almost 60 points. And then whatever happens against the top half teams.
18 gets you 54 yeah. points. And I think that's what you've got to look at. You've got to have a plan for it, know how you're doing it. And as I say, it looks like you finished the season with that plan. I'm a shape skeptic, Sean, mainly because I'm an old man now. And I'll always want Liverpool to play the way in which they played. They played when they won the lot under Jurgen Klopp. That'll always be me. I'm going to be that bore. I'm going to be in the pub telling you why it's not as good as it used to be in the old days. But the job is to take those points, and looks like that shape. You know, there's a fair bit of proof in the pudding, and also there's the fact that they do look like they can stick the ball in the back of the net. My concern watching these pre-season games is I think Liverpool have got 15, maybe 16, maybe even 17 players for whom this shape very much suits. Where it looks like it doesn't suit, it looks like agony, to be honest with you. And that is, you know, that we mentioned the five forwards. If you want to whack Doak in there, that's up to you. But you've got Trent, Jones, I think Elliot, when he played, you know, for instance, he started against Tottenham, Elliot. Let's give them the recruitment team faith, you know, around McAllister and Szoboszlai, that they should be able to do it as well. Bajcetic should be able to find a place in what we're doing here one way or another. You've obviously got Trent, you've got Robertson, you've got Van Dijk, you've got Konate. I understand there's a bit of scepticism around Robertson being a bit more withdrawn, but I've not seen loads to scare the horses in general on it. There's just it might be nice if there's a different option. And obviously you've got the goalkeeper. There is a problem watching the other bits and pieces, either in terms of there aren't enough other senior professionals knocking around. Thiago maybe with a question mark on him, but I think he's a good player who can find a home wherever. But I'm looking at Matip, it looks hard. I'm looking at Tsimikas, it looks rock hard. I'm looking at Joe Gomez, and I'm just not quite sure if he's helped by other people. I'm always very soft on Gomez, I know I am, but we've seen him have a ton of quality, but obviously there's also an injury question around him as well. And as I say, there's getting people in. My point about this is a tightrope walking way to play football. There's not a safety net under this at all. And when it looks bad, I think it'll look horrid.
Yeah, and I think he's definitely backing the shape, isn't he? As opposed to sort of individuals and looking around, you know, who fits where. Because as you say, it certainly suits some individuals more than it suits others. I thought it was interesting the fact that, you know, Conor Bradley's playing a role where he's almost imitating Trent and what Trent was doing towards the back end of last year, because he's sort of going into that, you know, that midfield role as well as being right back. So I think that in itself says he's definitely backing the shape as opposed to backing the individuals. Even like the lack of Joe Gomez at right back would suggest that to me. I feel like he's got his way home, and thinking back to last season where Thiago couldn't get in the team because of the shape that he was playing and stuff like that. It's interesting, I think, you know, to touch on sort of what maybe didn't go wrong and go back to what you were saying about the lower teams lower down the division and not beating them. I think a lot of it can be put down to mentality. I feel like, you know, we've prided ourselves on being mentality monsters, or Klopp's prided them on being mentality monsters for the last however long. And I think what he's referring to there is beating the small teams. And, like, you know, he talks about...
They've got our points.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And the Premier League's a hard league. You know, there's the reason why it's the best league in the world. There's no gimmies, really. You know, you might get one or two if someone's having a bad day. But... And I know we were a little bit damaged last year because of what happened the season before, not going on to win all Big Four, but compare the mentality, and you can just see it by looking at players. From we lose the Champions League final in Kiev, and then we go on to have two seasons where we get 90 plus points, and every single game it looks like they're so determined to get the points. I think of games where we've gone to Watford away, it's been an absolute slog, but we've kept the mentality super high and we've gone and got the win and we've won. You think about last season, the amount of arms thrown in the air when something doesn't go their way, almost as if like they're like going to Brighton away is beneath them, like they shouldn't be playing that. And I think that's where the changes were required, because you either fix that mentality and people just start to think a different way, or you change something, as in the shape, as you've just said. And I think the change in shape was the thing that turned our mentality from being that, oh, this again, we're doing this again, to we've got something new to focus on. And I feel like, you know, what's probably been forced on us is, you know, in terms of the midfielders that are exiting, won't be a bad thing for us on that front either, because you've got more fresh people coming in, more fresh minds, if you like, as well as the sort of, you know, the what we see as a senior spine in Van Dijk and Alisson, which should hopefully sort of breed that mentality. But I think the shape and what he's doing here and backing this thing is purely to try and, you know, change the way we're doing things and fix that mentality thing.
I'll be honest, I'm in Neil's camp, and the reason I'm in Neil's camp is for all the reasons that he stated, plus myself. I just think it looks good on the eye at times, but I don't think it's wow. It doesn't wow me. It's not like, oh, this is brilliant football, like Allah, what we did previously when we did win everything. It's functional rather than, you know, this is brilliant football that Liverpool should play for ever and a day. It's just sort of, as Neil's alluded to as well, that drop off when, say, we do make changes, enforced changes when Inzi's come in and say a Joe Gomez has got to start along Van Dijk or whoever, and or God forbid it's Gomez and Matip starting the centre half together like at Wolves away.
But that'll be a problem, just, whatever formation.
Yeah, maybe, but I just think more in this one, because it's still new, it's still relatively new, and I think when these players have come in, like in that second half yesterday, or like, yeah, it's only a friendly, and you know how much you want to read into it is entirely up to you. Personally, me, I'm not too bothered, but I just think because of the drop off from your starting 11 to your subs, I just think that it's just something that this can go horribly wrong at the worst possible times if, you know, for some reason that we're missing a couple of players, or if certain players come in for games that they're not really attuned to because they haven't played for about 10 games or whatever, and say they are a bit, you know, rusty coming into it and they're off the pace. So for me, I just think it's something that it's a temporary stick and plaster, but Klopp seems to be married to it now, so we're just going to have to suck it and see.
That would suggest what John said, though, about them being confident of getting players in. It is right, isn't it? Because I think you can't really judge from pre-season games, but it is personnel, isn't it? You look at the players, we've compared the forward to the back before, but you look at the drop-off or the level of players that are playing in the system, and that's where you get exposed, because you haven't got the right level of player there. If they're confident they're going to get them in and Klopp's back in the system, I'd sort of be of the mind frame that we are going to get the right people in, do you know what I mean?
I'm a lot more positive than you, Joel. I think for me, so in terms of on the ball, I think our passing's been really sharp in both games, and I think one of the features of us so far has been how well they've worked it, how you know, quickly they've. So many times last season, you're watching us when as soon as the team pressed us, we gave it away. Now that might be that we've just done a lot more work on it, but I think the extra angles that the new formation creates does help. It feels to me like you know, the sort of the change in formation and the extra man when we're attacking and the sort of the box style, they just look like they've got more options when they're on the ball, and so someone will press it or they'll close one passing lane, but it feels like there's another. So I think it'll help us keep it. I think it'll help us move the ball forward, and I think that'll make us more exciting. So on the ball, I think it's, you know, it is a really positive change, and I think it will help us. And I think when we've got something to the starting 11 or close to the starting 11 or there's 14 or 15 of them that you could put into an 11 that you, I think, will really suit and will really work for them. From a defensive point of view, I do accept that, you know, you're putting a little bit more pressure on yourselves, but I went to the Etihad last season and I was watching Man City play this, and I kept thinking the space in there for us if we can get in there, and we could never get in there because they were so hard to play against. And I think that the key to this working defensively is the press, and they need to press much better than they did last season. And that's what Jurgen Klopp is saying, and I'm sure hammering to them now, is that, you know, as I said, I was there watching Man City, and it felt like, oh, if we could just do this, and we can never just do that. And one of the reasons where we were a bit shit, but the other reason was that they're horrible to play against, Manchester City. It's sort of one of those things that people don't really talk about, because A, they don't really like praising Man City, and B, because they, you know, it's all about, you know, the what they are on the ball, and people forget, you know, until you watch them, especially in the flesh, just how horrible they are to play against. In that interview that Sean mentioned before with Jurgen, that the club did, that I thought Peter McDowell was really good, by the way. But we talked about. He talked in there about the idea of, you know, oh, do you want to go back and do you want to be back to Liverpool? Oh, God, fucking hell, we've got to be Liverpool. They're the worst team to play against. And I think getting that back, and that's front to back. And Jürgen was talking about it last season, it wasn't just this season. He was like, if you think the midfield's not functioning, it's partly because the forwards aren't doing the job. If you think the defence are looking a bit rocky, it's because the midfield aren't protecting them. It's all sort of linked, and he's right, and that's not to give anyone, you know, the off the hook, because apparently he's been big on responsibility, which is something that you picked out, which was a bit of a shame he didn't really answer that, did he? Yep. Peter McDowell brought it up and went, I mean, you're talking about responsibility a lot, and Jürgen was a bit like, I'm going to jump and talk about something else. Shut up, your grass. So we didn't talk, but it was interesting that's something that Peter McDowell has talked about. So it is about personal responsibility, but I think it's also you being personally responsible for not making your mate look like a dickhead. And we made our mates look like dickheads a lot last season, and that sort of needs to stop. And I think if they can get that right, or close to right, or much closer to what we used to see, which is going to be hard because we've lost some key players who were really, really good at making that happen, I think you could have two defenders, and it doesn't matter because they won't get there.
Because I think my concerns obviously stem from, you know, at the moment, obviously we're hopeful that we're going to bring more players in. So I think my concern greatly stems from the fact that at the moment we've got one recognised holding midfielder going forward, and he's only 18 and he's just had a long-term injury. So we're going off the basis of we haven't signed anyone yet.
Yeah, 100% need two midfielders.
That's where my concern lies, but then it feeds into who we're going to sign if we do sign. And that's where, if we get two players in who think, oh yeah, I fancy this and I like the look of them, then it might delay my fears. But obviously, if we leave it any later, that's when it's a bit, okay, we could do with knowing what's going to go on here, or what solution has Klopp got to remedy the fact that we're losing so much experience.
Loads of interesting little bits and pieces in there. My overall sort of takeaway is I do think that its main bit of pudding that the proof will be in, you see at the end of last season, which is we do need to do much better against the bottom 10. There's no pathway to being successful in this division which doesn't involve you taking at least 50 points against the bottom 10. I think that that's where the shape's got its main thing. There's a couple of other things. You obviously tweak it for some games if you want to, and it also wouldn't surprise me if certain players aren't available, it becomes something else, which is what the manager's always done as well, and I think it's worth bearing that in mind. As the season wears on, we're going to talk about those players who are to come next, but first and foremost, we've got John and Craig talking about Singapore.
It's John, give us a quick hand with a little insert to let you know we are going to Singapore for the tour. We try and support them every year. We have a good time, we get some great content, and delighted to be saying that we're going out again. I think it is, well, a week today we'll be there, mate.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited about it. I think, like, in comparisons to previous pre-seasons, it's like very, very different in that with the tours, like the last few times we've gone, it's after Kiev, then it's after Madrid, and then it's after the near sort of quadruple season. This time we're going after a difficult season, loads of change, loads of new faces, you know, potentially some big names who aren't going to be there, probably. I'm excited about it. We're going to hopefully learn a lot about Liverpool this season.
Well, that's it. It's going to be the third and fourth games that this new Liverpool team, if you like, will play. There's a second one behind closed doors. And so for a lot of people out there, they're going to be some of the first fans to see Alexis McAllister, to see Szoboszlai, maybe one or two more if they can get them over the line, which is a pretty cool thing.
It's brilliant, yeah. And, like, you know, I'm excited to see these footballers. Like, you know, we've seen a lot of Alexis, but obviously not in Liverpool's shirt. And we get a little bit during the week, an assist for him. Obviously, Szoboszlai, we've, you know, none of us will have seen in the flesh, or maybe once at Anfield when he played for Leipzig. But, you know, I'm buzzing to see these footballers, and I'm sure they are as well. And, you know, there's loads going on over the week as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to be getting involved with these fan festivals that Liverpool are running. So Liverpool like to make, you know, the events extra special for the supporters out there, put on things around the stadium. So there's open training on Saturday night, which you can get tickets for. But before that, Liverpool will be doing a fan festival on the Saturday. We'll be there. We're doing an hour on stage. You know, Martin Skill's going to be down there as well. There's some of the foundation coaches doing events and things like that. I'm sure Mighty Red will be about. You can't keep him out the action on tour. He'll be down there as well. So that's before the open training on the Saturday. On the Sunday, before the game, again, starting really early from the fan festival. So you know, make a full day of it, get yourself sort of down there if you are going, because there's loads going on. As I said, again, we'll be on stage. I think I'm doing something with a couple of, I think it's Gary Mack and Lucas Leiva, which is boss. I love them both. So that's really good. So that'll be on the Sunday as well. And then that's before the Leicester game. And then on the Wednesday, again, before the Bayern Munich game, there's going to be a bit more of a joint fan festival, I think, between Liverpool and Bayern. And I'm going to be doing something on stage with a couple of Liverpool legends and a couple of Bayern legends.
Claudio Bizzarro, what are you going to ask him?
Nice hair. Has he still got nice hair?
I don't know.
No, what do you reckon of Bayern? What happened to Sadio? That's what I'm going to ask him.
What do you mean? He's bald.
What did he do to Sadio?
That's something I'm genuinely interested in. Hopefully we can get a couple of Bayern you know, people out there. Not the players, I mean, like, you know.
Don't ask Sane.
Sane, what happened? you know, like, we'll be doing loads of our own content out there, and if there's anything in particular that you want from us, like, don't be afraid to let us know on social or by dropping us an email, help@theanfieldwrap.com. But we've got loads planned. But yeah, it'd be good to hopefully speak to someone from Bayern or a journalist at least to find out sort of what's happened with Sadio Mane and maybe some of their players that we're after as well.
Yeah, listen, there's loads of reasons why the Anfield Wrap support these tours and go with these tours. Obviously, we feel like we get really good content, both in terms of around the matches, but all this other activity that's going on as well. We normally get slightly better access than we do here as well, so hopefully...
Slightly better than none.
One up from none, they give us. And so yeah, we'll be doing stuff sort of around the games, but hopefully in between as well. There'll be loads of great content coming from us as well. But we also do it to go out and meet people who subscribe. So if you are going to the games, if you are going to the open training, if you're around, you know, do drop us a message, do come and say hello. We're always up for
a pint.
Yeah, we'll shock you. We'll go for a pint if you're having one and stuff like that. So do come and say hello. If you haven't got tickets, they are still available. You just need to go to the club website, so LiverpoolFC.com, and go through to the fixtures. You can click through from there to the site and buy tickets for the game. So it's Leicester City on the Sunday and Bayern Munich on the Wednesday nights as well, which should be fantastic. Yeah, so yeah, game. If you're in the area, get involved, go to the games, but come down to the fan festivals early and support us, but also say hello. It's always nice to meet people.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's one of my favourite things about doing these tours, really, is it's going and meeting subscribers that you maybe wouldn't necessarily have been able to. You know, we've met some brilliant ones, to the point where there is one that's coming with us that we met last time. He's we're going to have him working, is what I'd say.
Oh, yeah. He's like, oh, the lads have got me a journalist pass. Yeah, unlucky. Unlucky.
Yeah, right, yeah. We'll just another pair of hands. Yeah, you'll be working. But it's brilliant. And, you know, we've made so many mates from going on these trips, you know, people who have just been into the Anfield Wrap. And so, yeah, we're excited to go out and have a pint with you. And, I mean, it's a fucking, what a place Singapore is. And it's a brilliant stadium as well they're going to be playing in. So yeah, new faces to look forward to, and hopefully we'll meet a few of you out there.
Yeah, LiverpoolFC.com if you want to get your tickets. There'll hopefully be more information on the fan festivals coming out, but I've just probably said some stuff I shouldn't, but never mind. Do you know what I mean? We're definitely there. Mighty Red legends, foundation coaches, loads of stuff going on. Get your face painted. If no one will do it, me and Craig will. Up the Neds.
Getting a move on, John. You know, we've talked there about a couple of question marks about Liverpool's approach. I think having another couple of footballers who look as though they suit Liverpool's approach down to the ground would be no bad thing. I'd also like to see Thiago and Bajcetic for one thing. It'd be nice to see the pair of them get there. I can't be bothered talking anymore about those bums who are choosing to go, that it's all got a bit too hard and it's not for them anymore. It looked to me like Lavia and Paulinho may well have just become the plan from a Liverpool point of view. So I think the Paulinho injury, we talked about it on Gutter, I think that might actually prove to be a blow.
Yeah, it will. They do feel like they've got options this year, which is good. And it feels like, you know, there was a short list that was actually very long by all accounts, that they were whittling down as much on the sort of availability and you know, who they felt sort of fancied the fight, as opposed to the two others you mentioned, sort of next season. And Paulinho was emerging, and so this shoulder injury. They are a funny one, shoulder injuries, aren't they? And again, we talked about this on the Gutter. You know, sometimes they just pop it back in on the pitch and play on, don't they? And then other times it seems to be something that's a lot more significant. You know, the noises coming out of Fulham sort of aren't great, although maybe that's a little bit of a nah, he's injured, you know, you don't want him. and so we'll sort of see on that. But those two felt like, you know, in a realistic world, and we do all need to be sort of, you know, realistic, really. You know, there's names, you know, I'd absolutely love, you know, to have at Liverpool, but at this stage, where we're at in terms of, you know, what is doable and what can we get in, so we can get something in for Chelsea. especially is important. So, you know, we don't want to be chasing the wrong name for too long and then sort of end up scrambling around on the 30th of August. And so I think, you know, if it was them two, I'd have been happy. You know, the Lavia stuff seems to have, again, you know, really gained momentum. Apparently he was starting to wonder what was going on, but there's talk of a bid now, which suggests that, you know, that they are sort of saying to him, you know, I think most people like him as a footballer, but whether, you know, you don't want to go in with just him. He is still a young lad and there's a lot of games to play. And like Joel says, it is the area of the pitch at the moment where you feel like we are sort of shortest. So it's two. If it's them two and Napoleon, you think this is about, then I'd be really pleased with that. And if they can get a defender in next season, then great. And I feel like that is something that you can attack on all fronts with.
Lavia, it seems to me, Sean, there's I think everyone feels as though the plan was Lavia comes in, has a year, does bits, and then hopefully he's ready to take the mantle maybe at some point over the course of the season. I've got to be careful we don't talk that into being the plan, but it did look like that was the plan. It felt sensible. It seems to me a little bit like, if you're going to do him anyway, just do him as soon as you possibly can now. Off the base of the fact that, if, you know, hypothetically speaking, let's say we'd bought Paulinho and Lavia, got them both in, it was all done. Paulinho plays the friendly for us, dislocates his shoulder, and we're all going, well, he's going to start the first game of the season, at which point we'd say, well, we bought this lad Lavia, he looks all right, and he played well. I do think there is a little bit of a... regardless now of what happens with Paulinho, if Lavia was the one and he was going to be the backup, you can almost pretend... Well, he's been the backup and the main fella's got injured, and then you can work out who the main fella is. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. And I almost feel like we haven't got much choice, have we? You know, Joel mentioned it before. Well, Trent's playing number six at the moment, starting there. You know, I don't think for one second he's going to start there against Chelsea. I think he'll play right back, you know, unless we go on to sign a right back, which, you know, we may go on to talk about. But I feel like we've just got to do it. I think that the delay and waiting around, clearly they didn't fancy the 50 million valuation, but that was in a world before we knew that we were going to be getting 40 million quid for Fabinho. So maybe they're waiting to see if that just gets done and Fabinho, you know, signs his contract, all of a sudden we sort of wish him off and then we can press the button and pay a little bit more than what we maybe want to for Lavia. But I am with you. I think time is against us at the moment. You know, that Chelsea game is going to be round thick and fast, and it's not just about getting him in for that game.
It's less than 2 weeks.
It's about getting him into, you know, meet his teammates, meet everyone around the ground and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think we just need to do it and press the button.
The idea of, you know, picking a team for Chelsea, I feel a little bit like, you know, whether it's Paulinho, I think they are going to do two. I think they should do two. But if it's Paulinho now, or if someone else has now, it's to be the next cab off the rank. I think part of my Lavia thing for that game against Chelsea is you can pick a team where McAllister starts, Jones starts, Trent's doing, you know, if we're playing the shape at Chelsea, Trent's doing what he's doing. I feel like there's a lot of grown-ups there around him, a lot of players. You know, you can say what you want about Curtis, but he loves responsibility. Yeah. McAllister looks to me like he wants responsibility. Trent, this has all been about finding a way to empower him to take more responsibility. And then behind him, there is Konate, there is Van Dijk, there is Robertson. If it had to be that way, and I'm still not saying it necessarily will be, but if it had to be that way, there's worse first games as well, because they're trying to work out what on earth they're doing. They've got no midfielders. You know, that Lewis Hall might be starting for them. Let's be clear about that. Genuinely, it's not a joke. Lewis Hall might be starting for them. You know,
and he has played at all these places.
Yeah, you know, it's not his best game of last season's at Arsenal when they're going for the league.
Yeah, so he's played at all these places.
You know, and that's the thing. I'm looking, you talk about Curtis Jones, he's been forgotten about in the last few weeks. I know he's gone and won the Euros with England under-21s and whatever, but because we're so worried about who we haven't got yet and who we're desperately trying to sign, or and worrying to a degree, depending on what side of the coin you're on, about who is going, Jones has been forgotten about, I think, in the last week or two because of the discourse everywhere else. So if you're picking a team for Chelsea now, why shouldn't Curtis Jones be in it? You know, we all remember how
well Joel checked Twitter.
Oh, he's definitely, well, I'll have a look later. He's definitely in mind because I think, well, he finished the season well. Yeah. So he still deserves the shirt. And I remember seeing talk in one of the papers after, in the build-up to the under-21s final, you saying, oh, Jones is going to struggle to get back in Liverpool's first team next season. I was thinking, really? Yeah. Okay, yeah, we've just signed Szoboszlai and McAllister, but, you know, if anything, don't forget about him. All right, yeah, he's just spent over 90 million quid on two lads, but... You know, you've got Jones here who finished the season well, and I just think that this is his chance now to go on even further and to progress. And, you know, if he is going to have to step up as one of the senior members of the first team because of other people going, then, you know, give him that opportunity and give him that responsibility, and let's see if he thrives. And let's face it, if he can thrive in it, then we've got someone who's going to be a mainstay of that Liverpool team going forward. So why can't Jones start? And, you know, we'll see what happens with Szoboszlai and his injury. But, you know, midfield, Jones, McAllister and one another, whoever it may be, whether Bajcetic is fit enough or whether they go with experience for Thiago or whoever. You know, if I'm looking at that midfield and if, you know, Neil's reassuring me here about Chelsea's midfield, then, you know, let's go into it with a bit of confidence and let's fancy ourselves to beat Chelsea and lay down a marker.
Are we all in for Lavia plus one?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Should we just crack on then? Do you want to ring someone?
George's on to George now,
and he's going to sort it for us. So George's going to sort that for us, producing this.
And I think, you know, the point Sean made before on the money, like, it was, you know, they were probably thinking, oh, that's quite a lot, and I think they've had a look around and thought, you know what, you know, there isn't a value by it. There's not another Alexis who suddenly someone's going to go, oh, he's got this possible, he's closed, you know. So I think you're at the point where you're overpaying for whoever a little bit. But like you say, the Fabinho stuff was a little bit unexpected in terms of, you know, the value they were able to get. And, you know, we're in a situation now where, you know, fees are high, and it's either you need to pay it for someone or you go in light, and they can't go in light. And so I think they've maybe done the sensible thing. They've had a look about, they've weighed everything up, and then they've ended up sort of back where they started. And you'd either overpay for the lad that we want, and they've got a lot of faith in. And who knows, in 2 years' time, you might be going, fucking hell, 50 million. We'd be at the pants off.
Well, very quickly, what's funny is Neil's transfer committee game with that I was on has come to life, really, because you rolled the dice on Fabinho, and the offer that came in was over 40 million. And the people who were on it with me all unanimously agreed to sell him. And then I think we did say that we were going to buy Lavia.
So yeah, it's life imitating art.
And it very much is art. On defenders, quick, John, I'd love to see two come in. I'd be fine to see two go out. You know, I do wonder if the conventional left-back thing feels a little bit of a stretch at this point. Certainly if you're going to ask the very conventional left-back that we've got in Shimikas to do unconventional things on a regular basis, it just feels a bridge too far for him, because I'm not convinced about a conventional left-back. And before we get on to anything else, and I do wonder whether or not Matip's where we want him to be moving forward. I'd love to see two come in. But I've taught myself into a situation where I just want Pavard. And then one other, whether it's Colwill, who it looks like they've hung on for. It's interesting to me that Mickey van der Ven and Gonzalo Inacio, neither of whom have moved anywhere. And I think everyone predicted both would have by now. We know at least one of them's got a release clause, and it looks like everyone knows how much van der Ven will cost.
Yeah, I think they really need one. I'd like it to be two, but I'm just thinking, you know, you're giving yourself a little bit too much to do. But then there is time, and it's not as pressing as the defensive midfield thing. The defensive midfield thing was who started against Chelsea. Basically, you know, I've in my team that I keep banging on about on Twitter, you know, I've put Thiago there, but it was just because I couldn't think of who else. Do you know what I mean? And he's not played a minute of pre-season, and so that's really pressing. The defenders, you know, I need to remember, and we all need to remember, you have got till the 30th of August to maybe sort of do a bit.
1st of September, John.
I do apologise, 1st of September, Friday night. We're going to be all out for Pavard. But to sort of do that, because we more or less know who's starting that first game, you know. You know, I mean, injuries sort of aside, it is going to be Robertson, Konate, Van Dijk, and you expect Trent unless he ends up, you know, having to play six. So I think you have got a little bit more time there. I think they need to do one regardless. I could certainly be talked into two if they can shift one or two out. I'm with you, Jimmy, because I like his conventional left backing more than you. But if we're not going to do that, I think he's the one who's looked least comfortable with this sort of new thing. I think he can get up and down. I think he can win his battles with his tackles. And I think his delivery is good, and his set pieces are good. But I think, you know, asking him to sort of do this, I don't think, if this isn't a too mean a thing today, I don't think he's the smartest footballer. And that's not saying he's not a smart lad. I'm just saying, in terms of, you know, the different things.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think he's not one who's like, oh, Tchimikas will figure it out. Do you know what I mean? And that's fine. Do you know what I mean? He's made a really good life out of being a very good left back, and so asking him to sort of do this, you know, it doesn't work for everyone, and I don't feel like it sort of worked for him. And so, and Matip, I don't want him very close to
do you know what I don't want to start saying can Joel Matip just fuck off?
Yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
he's been a Liverpool legend, and I don't want to be watching 12 months of him thinking, I can't wait till we get this fella out.
Yeah.
And the worry is, off the back end of last season, which I'm prepared to give, you know, a lot of passes out about, and that things have all, or the midpoint of last season, things have all gone a bit wrong, and it's all gone a bit hard, and that's all right. And, you know, I just don't want to see someone who I genuinely think, you know, has been so important to a wonderful era of supporting Liverpool. I don't want to get to the point of watching him just going, I don't want to see a team sheet with him on, even in the Europa League, where I'm bouncing in for Ben Doak on the one hand. On the other hand, there's this,
yeah.
if you know what I mean, thinking, oh God, this is going to be a bit of a slog.
And I don't think what you're talking about necessarily needs to cost loads of money. Like, I don't think Pavard would cost loads. I think his wages would be very high, but then Joe Matip's wages are really high.
And Henderson's going, and Fabinho's going.
Yeah, and the left-back situation, you know, like you say, there's release clauses and things like that. There's Mickey van der Ven, and you will get some money for Tsimikas, because, like I said, he's a good conventional.
And there aren't many of them around, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so, like, you could probably end up with a situation where, you know, you're only looking at a 20, 30 million outlay in terms of, you know, transfer fees, and you'd end up a little bit wage neutral. And so, you know, I don't think it'll cost loads, but we'll see.
Quick.
Yeah, so, I mean, I actually think that the defensive situation, you know, if you think about it in just numbers terms, like getting a good right-back in, I think, is important to us, because you think about that six, right, and what we just said about getting Lavia in is essential. We haven't got much choice. That's for Chelsea. But if you think if Thiago's fit, if Bacicic is fit, all of a sudden you've got people who can play there, who are senior players. Thiago can play there, Bacicic can play there, Curtis Jones could play there if he wants to, Trent can play there. You've got numbers you can play there, and you can trust them to play that position. You know, other than Trent, and, you know, I know Bradley has been alone and did, he does look good, but there's not many people. If Trent does get an injury, I think you're in trouble there. So for me, I'd be focusing on a right back, and, you know, Pavard can obviously play right back. I'd be keen to get him in. But when you said before Lavia plus one, I didn't think you meant midfield. I'd take Lavia plus one, and the plus one being a defender.
Lavia plus two, so Lavia plus a midfielder and a defender. But I think it all hinges on whether they sell Phillips or not.
Oh, I forgot about him. There's some more money.
Because I think Matip's going to see his contract out. I'm accepting of that Matip's going to be hanging around for one more year.
All right, then. I'd like to see them do Lavia plus three. And I think that when we check the calculations on Countdown, I'm right. There we are. And also, they can do one a week for 4 weeks. That's the other thing they can do. They can do one a week for 4 weeks.
He that takes that a fair George bit of work. Study.
Yeah. One a week for 4 weeks would be absolutely perfect. It all ticks over. John, have a word when you're in Singapore. Thank you very much to Joel. Thank you very much to Sean. Thank you very much to John. Jordan has produced this, and he's done so admirably. It is the Anfield
Singleton.
Rant. Singleton, yes. Not Henderson. He's doing something else. He's got other things on. Thank you very much. It is the Anfield Rap. We'll see you soon. Sports Social Podcast Network.